What's pause in all this?
Woo! Put Scooter on the phone, you bird brain.
What do you do, backflips? You jump up there in a silly suit? What do you do?
You go bam! I want you to play that.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Good evening. Fast Freddy here. A little bit under the weather, but we're getting back into it. Fortunately, no COVID, so that's why I'm here. You know, Right. That's why I'm here. I don't want to, you know, spread any COVID around. And I did get tested. You know, I got a little bit of a, I think when the weather changes at this time of the season, you know, I get a little congested, but.
You have a raspiness. You should
sing
some tunes or something.
Yeah, really, really. But I've been a lot of people thought I wasn't on the air on Y103 for the last few days because I was still mourning the Cleveland Browns loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers. The rumor was that I was locked up in my room with the curtains closed and an empty bottle of Jack laying on the floor, and that I was in a fetal position, sobbing uncontrollably, and I didn't want to leave my room. That's not true.
No.
But if we lose to the Bengals on Sunday, next Monday, I can't tell you what might happen. That could definitely be a possibility. But we'll talk a little bit later about Browns and Steelers and the whole thing with Odell Beckham Jr., which to me, no big loss. And as you can see, I still got my Browns gear on. I just haven't changed my clothes since,
you know. I see the tears.
The tear-stained Browns, you know. The tears of a Brown. You know, Smokey Robinson had the tears of a clown.
Yep.
I might have to have the tears of a brown.
That would be a good spoof, wouldn't it?
I'm going to have to, you know what, I'm writing that down.
Yes.
The tears of a Brown. You know. And you know what's really sad about that whole thing? And this is one thing that just really pisses me off. And because it's so hard to defend the fact that Big Ben is 24-2-1 against the Cleveland Browns and that he's the winningest quarterback in Cleveland Browns Stadium. I mean, think about that. I mean, you could sit there and call him Ben Rapelessberger and Schitzberg, and you could say everything. But to me, unfortunately, the simple argument is 24-2-1. They should put out shirts that say that. There's another idea. Let's
there
put some
go.
Shirts out.
Yeah.
24-2-1. Black
it.
And gold shirts, 24-2-1. You'd sell a million of them.
Yes, we would.
You know, and I sit there and I think of that. And then he's like 50 and something against the entire state of Ohio. He has 50 wins against the state of Ohio. And he played football in Ohio. I mean, it
would have been nice to beat him just that last time.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be Big Ben's retirement party.
Right.
I thought we were going to send him out. I thought Myles Garrett was going to crush him. And he wasn't even going to make it to the end of the game.
Nope.
And I thought it was going to be this big victory. And it turned out to be a heartbreak. And then to add insult, I think that's what makes me hate him even more. That's what makes me hate him even more. Once it goes on like that, it's just like, I hate the guy even more. You know, hey, you know, he's you're his bitch. You got to own that. I'm not owning it. Nope. I just hate him even more. It just makes
was it possible? Yes, it was. You know,
yeah, right. Just when I thought I could not dislike Big Ben any more than I already do, Sunday comes around and it's horrible. It's terrible. And it just drives me up a wall. And I thought we were going to send him out. Adios, Ben.
Double middle finger.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Take him out on a stretcher, put him out on the cart. You know, people would be clapping and everybody would say classless Browns fans applauding Ben's injury or whatever. No, 24-2-1. 24-2-1. Mm. Yeah, I mean, come on.
Not good.
No, it's terrible.
Owned for a decade.
That's terrible. That's terrible. Oh, that's 12 seasons.
Hey, bum me out. What are you doing coming in here like that?
You know what? I really shouldn't be doing that. You know,
want some coffee? You need some coffee.
Yeah, you know what? Some coffee would be great. So anyways, that was my thing. And I just hope we get back on track. As far as Odell Beckham goes, you know, who cares about him? But we'll talk about that a little later on. We have a really good guest here coming up this evening. It's Danny Hutton, the lead singer from Three Dog Night, one of the lead singers, Corey Wells passed away, but this is an amazing band. Three Dog Night has had so many hits. It's unbelievable. When they had their run, they set all kinds of records for top sales and most songs on the charts. I mean, they went through this period of time where they were just on a roll. You know, everybody knows Joy to the World. Jeremiah was a bullfrog and celebrate, celebrate. And they just have one hit song after another. And they went on that tear. And to this day, people still love their music. And Danny's got some theories as to why their music has stood the test of time and why the band was so popular. And he was also, you know, from Southern California. And he was in that whole Southern California scene with like Crosby, Stills, and Nash and all the stuff that was going on the Sunset Strip and everything. And if there was one, you know, they have that movie Laurel Canyon, a documentary about the stuff that went on out there. And it was just this hotbed of creativity and this hotbed of music. And these guys were right in the middle of it. And, you know, they were selling tickets and records and right up there with everybody. And I can remember one of the first 8-track tapes I ever bought. And this is when I had, like, I think a 66 Olds Delta 88. And, of course, I had a 8-track tape player that I bought off of somebody. Probably stolen. You know, nowadays it's the catalytic converter.
Yeah.
Back in the day, everybody was stealing 8-track tape right? players. Yeah. That was a big thing. And they would sell you an 8-track tape player, and it would have that little pigtail on the end, and the wires would be like about a half inch short that you could barely, yeah, where they snipped them off at. So, you know, when I sit there and bitch about people trying to steal my catalytic converter, I got to sit there and think, I might have bought somebody's 8-track tape player back in the day. It was his brother's, and he was getting a new one. He was moving up, and he had to get rid of this one. Sure. That's all. And I'll give it to you for $10. Really? Oh, you know. And I'd jerry-rig it in there, and, you know, and sometimes the tape wouldn't hold or whatever.
The cardboard shims.
Yeah, and then I would you know, I some of the tapes that they sold back in the day, I guess they were probably bootlegs, and they were like, they had all the different hits of the day on there. And I can remember several of those 8-track tapes had, some Three Dog Night songs on there, like Eli's Coming and Celebrate, Joy to the World, Mama Told Me Not to Come. What a smash song that is. To this day, if you put on either Joy to the World or Mama Told Me Not to Come, people get up and they get moving. And there's a version. Tom Jones recently did a version of Mama Told Me Not to Come with a younger band. And I'll tell you what, they just knock it out of the park. I forget who it was, but it was just a fantastic job. But the songs were so good. And that was one of the things about Three Dog Night is they had a lot of great songwriters, people like Hoyt Axton. You know, his mom wrote Heartbreak Hotel for Elvis Presley. And Hoyt Axton had a ton of songs for other people. I've Never Been to Spain. That's another Three Dog Night song. I mean, so they're, you know, and Russ Ballard and I think Randy Newman. I think they did an Elton John song. So they had a lot of songs written by a lot of great songwriters. And I'm sure Danny will explain on how they put this all together and how it all started. So let's start our interview here this evening with Danny Hutton from Three Dog Night. They're coming to Packard Music Hall Sunday night, and it's going to be a great show. Another Danny, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm honored, Fat Freddy, to be on your show.
Well, this is a big event. I'm sure this is a big event here. I know you guys have played Super Bowls and have played before millions of people, but, you know, being on the air with me, I can understand where, you know, you were probably looking like, how are we going to take it to the next level? And man, you found it. Here you are.
Yeah, well, all I can say, well, I was kind of wimpy about it, but I had a Triumph 650. So I know you're a motorcycle guy. I know it's, I don't like sending that to a Harley guy, but it was in 68 and 67. I had a Triumph. Good little bike.
Well, you know, back in the day, the Triumphs were the bike. I mean, that's what Marlon Brando was riding in the Wild Ones.
And I know. Yeah, that's so funny when you see all the police in L.A. all had Harleys. And then when they switched to the Japanese bikes, it was so weird. It just seemed it was not a Harley moment. It was very weird.
Right. So what kind of bike did you have there?
A 650. It wasn't a Bonneville, but I dropped it a few times. But then, not serious. I used to love it. I live in L.A. and up in the Hollywood Hills, so Mulholland and stuff. That was a lot of fun. Griffith Park.
Oh, I would imagine. You know, that's one place I always wanted to go, man. Just ride up the West Coast and just enjoy that scenery. Everybody that has rode that tells me that it's some great roads and awesome scenery.
Oh yeah, it's gorgeous. Going up the Big Sur, you know, Highway 1. That's a beautiful. That's a beautiful ride.
Oh, man, I would love to do that. So, anyways, let's talk a little bit about Three Dog Night here. What a phenomenal band. I mean, you want to talk about tons of hit records and just enormous popularity. What is it, you know, what is the secret to the success of Three Dog Night? Why did the band take off? Why do people love it?
Well, I think my mother used to say self-praise is no praise at all, but we were and are a really good live band. You know, a lot of people, we started out, I think most people don't realize, they listen to our hits and a lot of the hits that we never voted on them. We just let the record company put them out. A lot of them are a lot softer than we really are live. You know, we started out touring with the Vanilla Fudge and then with Steppenwolf. We did a tour with them, and then my most fun was we did dates. We had the same promotion company as Led Zeppelin. So when they started, we were out with Led Zeppelin, and opening act was James Taylor. So it's all changed a little. We had a plane. They would put their name on the plane when they went out on tour, and then they come back with a big turboprop, and then take their name off and put our name on it and go out. So it was a fun time, but we can get down. We can play any genre of music, and there was no amateurs. When I put the group together and everybody in the group, excuse me, all the musicians with us, they all had been the leaders in their own groups and the lead singer, along with playing their instrument. So then there was the three of us singing lead. So, like I said, there were no rookies. Everybody can kick ass. So, every genre of music, from easy listening to pop to rock, country, number one on the R&B charts, recorded with the London Symphony Orchestra at Abbey Road Studio, on the classical charts. So we used to get nailed. What are you guys? Well, what style of music? And I used to just say, we just do good music. But to get around to your question, I think it's the songs are everything. You can be great, a great band, and especially instrumentally, you can just do great musical exercises, but that doesn't mean it's going to be something that musicians understand it, but people won't. Sometimes for me, I understand jam bands and doing all that stuff, but I like melodies. I like choruses, and I don't like to get political. So our stuff is all about having a good time,
right,
or about emotions. I think that has a lot of shelf life, that kind of stuff. And we do a lot of harmony. So people in other countries, they can still, even if they don't know the words, they'll like, you know, if it's a good melody, they'll understand the melody and they'll understand doing good harmony.
Now, you were talking about the great songs. You've had a lot of great songwriters, too. Harry Nilsson and Randy Newman, Elton John, Paul Williams, Hoyt Axton. Yeah. I mean, what a great collection of songwriters to add to the success of the band.
Yeah, well, and again, the critics, we were not the critics' favorites. And well, either was Led Zeppelin when they started.
But right.
The whole thing was that they used the word, like a cover. They're just covering other people. And I would just, we didn't cover anybody. We resurrected songs that had come out and hadn't happened. Like one was something that Harry Nilsson did on his album. And the album had been out 6 months or 8 months, and nothing happened with it. So I always say we're in the resurrection business. Well, I think as far as grabbing a song and finding out the guts, how it works, and moving all the parts around and arrangements, and doing our own thing to it. Otherwise, it's just karaoke. If you're going to do a song like the original Head, well, you better do it better. And that's really hard to do.
Right.
Or make it your own. You just change it up. I think every hit can be done in three or four different ways. You do it country, rock, do whatever you want on a song.
Now, you were talking about, touring back in the day in the 60s and the 70s. How has touring changed over the years? Other than the audience, some of us are getting a little older. I mean, how have, like, concerts and the whole scene, how has that changed over the years?
The obvious thing that people don't realize, buses. When we started with station wagon and that kind of stuff. And then they get onto these crude buses, and the buses now are incredible. That's one thing that's changed. But again, history has been rewritten about us. So the Beatles came out and did stadiums. And you know who the next act that did stadiums? Three Dog Night. And they talk about Crosby, Stills, and Nash. We did the Cotton Bowl with the Faces with Rod Stewart opening for us. We did Three River Stadium with Leon Russell opening for us. So and all the big screens and all that stuff. We did that in 1970. So we had a good run. We little known record, and it's not that big a deal, but we hold the record for the most consecutive top 40 hits in a row. Anybody, that's the Billboard, which means obviously we can't ever release another song. We'll break our record.
Right. I'm looking at the list of songs here, and it's taking me back to my 8-track tape days. But Mama Told Me Not to Come, Joy to the World, R&B, Shambhala,
R&B number one, R&B. There's R&B, and then Shambhala. This is another different genre, kind of a folky, hippie kind of thing.
Yeah.
One is a power pop kind of song, and Never Been to Spain is a country song. Easy to Be Hard is almost easy listening. We just followed, serve the song, get the song. By the way, we have a new album that we first album since the late 70s, complete album. I wrote half the album. And we're really, really proud of it. So that'll be coming out called The Road Ahead. Be coming out in we're firing on all cylinders. The keys, a lot of groups, sadly, have to lower their, the keys in their songs and all that stuff. And we're right there. We sound like the record or better.
Well, that's really good to hear. Going back to the song list, I'm even looking like about how these songs, the different styles and how they change. You're talking about like Never Been to Spain. Then you got songs like Liar or Eli's Coming.
Yeah, that's right. Power Rock.
Celebrate. I mean, it's just like
it's a celebrity ball, you have crazy stuff. But our albums, half of it, a lot of people don't aren't aware. If you listen to our albums, like half the albums are heavy rockers and blues, so we like I said, they would pick one or out in the country and stuff like that. And we're always blown away. We always like the first song on every album we thought was going to be the single, and that was never the one. We'd get a phone call and they'd say we're going to release this, and we'd say what? That one, and they were right. So
now, when you have this many hits, how do you figure out what you put in the show, what gets played, what doesn't get played?
The flow. Once in a while, we'll throw in something else, but we have a flow. We hit them, you know, from the beginning. You got to kind of hit them in the mouth at the beginning, and then keep their interest so everybody stops crossing their arms, saying, you know, am I going to like this guy? And once they start to like you, then you can do something a little softer, and then, you know, bring it up. And you kind of try to read the audience. Mm-hmm. And then we'll throw in maybe a couple of new ones from the new album. And I'm just thrilled. But, you know, I go back. By 1965, I'd been on four labels already as a solo act.
So, wow.
I was hired with HBR, Hanna-Barbera, when they decided to become a rock and roll record label. You know, that's what I did. I used to write and produce and play the instruments and stuff in the A&R department. So I was like their studio rat. I wasn't a performer. You know, all the other bands were out doing five sets a night in their station wagon, traveling around, and I was at Hanna-Barbera in L.A., just making records, and I would make the records, do the lead, do three-part harmony in the background, and play drums, and I was not, I'd use a leather chair for the snare, and if I couldn't do a guitar part, I would slow the track down, and then do the part, and then speed it back up. You know, Lindsey Buckingham does that in a lot of stuff just because he wants the effect.
Right.
So I learned, and then they had a show, Pebbles and Bam Bam, introducing them. I don't know if you're old enough to remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so introducing them. So they put me on the show. They drew me and put me in Bedrock on TV. So that was my start. And they said, that song you just did, we're going to put your name on it. And I said, I'm not an entertainer. And they put my name on it.
Uh-huh.
And I was on the American Bandstand, all those shows with a Loving Spoonful. And so I've been around. You know, I went on tour with Sonny and Cher when they had I Got You, Babe.
Wow.
That whole era, and then came back, and then I ended up becoming friends with Brian Wilson. Frank Zappa and I went over to MGM Records after I left Hanna-Barbera when there was like no royalties. I went, what's going on here? Must have been a mistake, right? And then our manager became the president of Brother Records, so he brought me up to Brian Wilson's house. So I was around Brian, and I learned so much from him. He's like a professor. The whole Pet Sounds album, I was there.
Wow.
In the studio while he did God Only Knows and Wouldn't It Be Nice, all those songs, and I just watched him. The genius at work blew my mind. And then one of my best friends, he's a sweeter. I was best man at his last wedding. So I brought the other two guys up to his house, and we actually did. He recorded us up there while the Beach Boys were on the road, and then they came back. And Mike Love said, "That song, that's a hit song. What do you gave that song to the guys?" And I would have done the same thing as Mike. I don't hold any grudges, but Brian wrote the song for me called "Darling," and so they took our voice, our track, took our voices off, and put Carl on lead and had him. It's a song called "Darling."
That's one of my favorites too, man. That's one of my Beach Boy favorites right there.
Yeah. That was written and done by us. So that was really a good thing because our manager said, well, we don't want you guys being a trio that's recorded, with a Wrecking Crew, all of those LA guys that did everybody's records, including the Birds song and Tambourine Man. And we've got a band together. And that's when it all happened. It happened really fast.
Wow, that's crazy. I wish I would have been able to be around that whole West Coast scene at that time. You know, you hear all about it. And man, I always thought that, boy, if I could transport myself to someplace in history, you know, Woodstock would definitely have been one of them. And just to see that whole California scene just unfolding.
Oh, yeah. Well, Laura Canyon, I'm sitting right now. I live in Laura Canyon. I lived in this house since 77. I bought it from Alice Cooper. And, Mickey Dolenz is living next door, and it's, you know, it's in the Hollywood Hills, but it's not like overlooking the smoggy city. I'm like in a forest with a long driveway that's crazy, and I'm only about 12 minutes from the Sunset Strip. So that I was here for the, you know, since 64 when Stills and Neil Young moved in, came in as, I thought, like interlopers, these guys, down the, you know, I was renting a house and stuff, and I became buddies with them. So I've been around. Are you into punk at all?
I dabble.
Yeah, well, I managed a group called Fear. I don't know if you know who Fear is, but you should watch The Decline of Western Civilization, and they close it.
Yeah, and I've seen that movie before. I'll just have to pay a little closer attention and keep an eye out for them.
Well, the guy that kicks the girl in the face when she's trying to get up on stage.
Oh, okay.
That's leaving. They were Belushi's favorite group. He actually, in Rolling Stone, there's a picture of him hitchhiking, and he's got a fear button. They're the first speed metal group that, before that word was even used. They're, you know, all the fear bands, all of the bands that kind of, learning how to play, and they had all of the attitude. These guys could kick ass. I'm real deal, but really, really crazy. Everybody's a little afraid of them. But
yeah, I'll definitely have to check that out and go back and rediscover that. You know, Youngstown is the home of Stiv Bators too, by the way.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So yeah, we know a little bit about punk here in Youngstown. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. But I love that. That was when we stopped working for about 3 years. So I just kind of managed and got into the whole scene. You know, the Go-Go's from their little fat, chubby girls.
Uh-huh.
And X, John Doe.
Wow.
I was real good buddies. I don't know if you like Little Feet, but Little Feet were great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm fantastic. That's me singing harmony on the Rollin' Easy with... I'm singing harmony on that. On the Dixie Chicken album.
Wow!
So
you've had pretty good career so far, man. I mean, you've been right in the middle of everything that's going on.
Yeah, absolutely, I helped Elton when he was Reggie Dwight get his thing going in the States, helping him get in the Troubadour. All that stuff. I took him to his first restaurant in L.A. when he arrived. He didn't know anybody. So, yeah.
Like I say, I would have just loved to have been a part of that scene or just been a spectator just watching all this kind of stuff unfold, because it is just so much a part of our rock and roll history.
Yeah, you know, and I'm 79 now.
Uh-huh.
And everybody says, well, the old, and there's no, it, to me, it's not old, it's just being out of shape. I weigh what I weighed in 1976. I'm like 6 feet, 100, well, about 160 now. And I exercise every day and all that stuff. And I really watch what I eat. So, and I sing a little higher than I sang in my 20s.
How about that?
Yeah, that's crazy.
And now you guys played a couple of Super Bowls too, right?
Yeah,
like? Why don't you talk a little bit about that and how it has changed over the years to what it's evolved to now?
Well, when we did one, the one that I really remember is the Temptations, the three lead singers from the Temps, David Ruffin, the guy that replaced him, and then the Kendricks, the guy with the high voice. Oh, hang on, that's a car alarm. Anyway, when we're doing it, they're backing us up on Joy to the World. Can you believe that, the Temps?
Yeah.
But we were in the dressing room, and the three of them and their girlfriends or wives and us, and they were all right, friendly with us, but they didn't talk to each other. The three of them, they were in three different parts of the room.
Wow.
And Kendricks ended up getting up, going over the big trash can and vomiting in it. thought, oh. And then I guess when he got back to his hotel, he was in there for 3 days. You know, he had a drug problem. So wow. I think he was freebasing and all that stuff. And they finally broke it down. And
And then they went back home, and then, within 6 months, his body was dumped in front of a police station, so.
Oh, man.
The poor, Anyway. No,
man, you were right there, though, for all this stuff. That is really, really cool, man. That is awesome.
Yeah,
I love these kind of stories. I love this kind of stuff. And because, I just love rock and roll music so much. That's why I do what I do. And, I've always been into music since I was a young kid. I always had the most records out of everybody in my class and all that kind of stuff. And hear these kind of stories. I really enjoy hearing that kind of stuff. Now, listen, I know you got to get going, and I don't want to keep you from your next interview here, but Danny, why don't you tell everybody what they can expect when Three Dog Night comes to Packard Music Hall in Warren on November 7th?
Well, we're all healthy, and we are a good band. We know how to, there's no rookies in a band. Everybody knows what they're doing, and especially having all this time off, everybody's got this energy, and it's not like we're all burned out from doing these big long tours. It's like so refreshing and appreciative. And I've noticed a lot of our audiences, they're just ready to see live stuff. Live music is the only thing that you can't reproduce any other way. Live experiences, it's crazy.
Yep.
Because you're on a tightrope wire.
Yep. So Three Dog Night, 21 consecutive top 40 hits, 3 number ones, 11 top tens, 18 straight top 20s, 7 million selling singles, and 12 straight gold records. I don't know what more you could ask for. I think that says it all right there. It speaks for itself.
Yeah. We'll come out and try to put some ear spank on everybody.
That sounds good. Well, listen, Danny, I want to thank you for taking some time out for us, and I can't wait to see the show at Packard Music Hall, and maybe sometime somewhere down the road, you get a little more time. We could get a little even more in depth on some of these stories. They're just fantastic.
Absolutely, man. All right, you stay safe on your bike, man.
I will. Danny, thanks for talking to us. Danny Hutton from Three Dog Night, November 7th, Packard Music Hall. It is going to be a night of nonstop hits, and it'll be definitely worth your time to check it out.
Thanks.
All right, thanks, Danny. Awesome, man. It was so great to talk to you. Thanks for the time, man. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Fast Freddy.
Okay. Take care, man.
Bye. Bye.
So there you have it, Danny Hutton from Three Dog Night, and they will be at Packard. Excuse me, they will be at Packard Music Hall this Sunday night. That's going to be a great show. One big smash hit after another, and like he said, the thing about Three Dog Night is every one of their songs sounds different. Liar, Celebrate, I've Never Been to Spain. Mama Told Me Not to Come, Joy to the World. Every single song sounds different. Shambhala, every single song that they do sounds different. You can't pigeonhole them. And I think that was the beauty of the band. But how about Danny? What an interesting story. That guy has been around. And I want to interview him again because 20 minutes, 25 minutes isn't enough. I'm sure I would have liked to have heard more about Elton John and what he was like in, 1972 when he just first came to America and, like him watching Elton John progress from this guy that didn't know anybody and needed somebody to take him to a diner on the Sunset Strip to find a place to eat to becoming what he is today and what he thought about his transformation and stuff. That could have been hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to Danny again somewhere down the road. A lot of interesting stories from him. And once again, Three Dog Night, Sunday night, Packard Music Hall in Warren. And if you like that kind of music, I think it's going to be a great time.
Alice Cooper's house. That's cool.
Yeah.
Living in Alice Cooper's
house. Oh, yeah. That whole Laurel Canyon scene was just so amazing. It's so important to rock history that that you could go on forever.
My neighbors are not rock stars. Not at all.
No. But down there, everybody was. If you weren't, there was something, something suspicious about you.
Those houses are pretty cheap out there anyhow.
But yeah, I'm just battling this little chest cold here. Like I say, fortunately, nothing you know, no COVID. That's the main thing. You know, before you never had to worry about that.
Right.
You know, before you'd sit there and think, well, maybe I got the flu, you know, but now it's like, you don't want to go to work or come here or something. And you just can't do that anymore. And you could get vaccinated and you see people get vaccinated, could get sick again. And so it's like, you know, I don't want to take any chances. Hey, my buddy, Paul Maverick is checking in from out in San Diego, California. What's up, Greek? What it be, Blee? How you doing? Keith Sturgeon checking in, man, talking about, riding there up the west coast of California. That would be awesome. Jay Bird, he says, I still sound a little under the weather. Yeah, I do. And, you know, these guys now, Jay Bird wants to redeem himself. They got tickets to see the Stones in Detroit here coming up. And I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get off work. So yeah, now they're
it's a little late, guys.
Yeah, they're giving me a little bit of a hard time there. But hopefully I'm going to be able to make it. Dave says, what's up? More ruckus tonight. Yeah, you got to bring the ruckus to the ass, Larry. Do you ever watch that show, Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Yeah.
That when is Leon? That was that one. He's on there. You got to bring the ruckus to his ass, Larry. Did you bring the ruckus to his ass? You know, and I think ruckus. That show is one of the funniest shows on TV, and the new season seems like it's really funny. And some people that have never seen the show, and I explain it to them, they go, well, how do they get away with it? And it's because he always comes off as the jerk at the end. He always looks bad. It's not like he walks away the hero, even though he says what he wants to say, but he's always the jerk in the end. Yeah, so that's how they get away with it. Yeah. Oh, no matter what it was. How about the one, they had this one and he was dating this woman. And she had this little boy and he was like very flamboyant. Where they found a kid to act so flamboyant is beyond me. And so Larry's waiting for his mom to get ready and he's sitting there and the kid comes in and, you know, Larry's going, hello, how are you? I'm just fabulous. I'm wonderful. And Larry's looking at him and I can't laugh. And so the next thing you know, Larry is just killing time by scribbling in this magazine and he's drawing swastikas on pictures and he's drawing Hitler mustaches people. And so the kid walks over and he goes, what are you doing? What's that? And he's explaining, oh, Hitler was a very bad man. And he goes, well, what's that thing you're drawing? And he goes, oh, that's a swastika. And the kid goes, oh, I love it. It is wonderful. The lines go this way and up and down and they come around. Oh, it's so wonderful. And Larry's like, no, that's a bad thing. So his mother comes down and they go out. And then his birthday comes up and the kid was watching Project Runway. So his birthday comes up the next couple of days and Larry buys him a sewing machine.
Oh no!
And his mom goes, Larry, what the hell's wrong with you? Why would you buy a boy a sewing machine? And Larry's kind of like, well, did you? And then, you know, and then the kid opens it and he just goes
flamboyantly
excited. You know, if he had confetti, he would have been Rip Taylor throwing confetti in the air. This is spectacular. It's splendid. And he's just going on and on and on. So the next thing, you know, a few weeks later, they're sitting in the park. And it's him and his mom and the kid comes over and there's some other people sitting on these park benches. And he goes, Larry, I made you something with the sewing machine. And then he goes, oh, what did you make me? And he goes, oh, a throw pillow. And it's a throw pillow and it's got a great big swastika on it. His mom just goes berserk.
Oh, that's good.
But that's the only show that I think I can get away with that kind of stuff, you know?
That's right.
You know, and then he'll get in trouble with, you know, lesbians and sometimes
they push on all those buttons.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. And you know, and he's just that show is just so funny, and it's like, it's getting funnier, you know?
Right.
So I will recommend that to everybody. You got to check out the new season of Curb Your Enthusiasm, or if you're like me, you could binge watch these things on YouTube. You know, sometimes I could watch 20 clips in a row. It's just different scattered clips, you know? And I do that all the time. It's like, instead of like maybe watching a show on TV, and if I'm too cheap to get HBO, you know, then I just sit there and, you know, just go through different ones and
how
different
spoiled
scenes.
We are. Remember you had to listen to all the song and watch all the show?
Oh, yeah.
You know, stay up late to see it?
Right,
now
right.
It's just like, I want it now, and I'm just going to go download
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I'm just going to watch this one funny scene here.
Yeah.
Hey, Hunky Joe Fecko in the house. How you doing, Hunky Joe? What you know, Hunky Joe? My buddy TJ also in the house, and I'll be probably seeing TJ this Sunday. Yankee Lake Motorcycle Swap Meet. I know a Bait of Ohio always has a, excuse me, a setup out there. So, you know, that should be pretty funny. Or pretty funny. What am I talking about? Pretty funny. Pretty fun. It might be funny. Yeah, there's some funny stuff goes on out there, you know? So, yeah, I like motorcycle swap meets. The basic premise of the motorcycle swap meet is, bring the shit you have laying around the house and buy some other shit from somebody else. You know, you bring that pile of crap that you have in your garage and somebody else will have
somebody else's crap.
Yeah, and then we'll just have an exchange.
That's it.
But you know what the beauty of the swap meet is? Now, this is how guys, if you're married, this is how some of them guys could get over making extra money without their wife knowing, you know, making some funny money, because right. As far as your wife is concerned, she sees that pile of junk in the garage that she wants out. Little does she know that somebody's looking for that exact part yes. out there, you know? And she, yeah, get that shit out of the garage and get this stuff cleaned out. Yep. And well, okay, honey, I'll take it out to the swap meet and see what I got, you know,
yep.
See what I got there, you know. And meantime, you know, somebody will go, man, that's exactly what I need. What do you need for that? Two bills. How's that? Yeah, 175. You know what? Okay, 175. Take it.
Now so you got two boxes to come back.
No. This guy goes and buys that. And so the wife goes, well, what did you get for that? Oh, nothing. I practically had to throw it away. And nobody wanted that junk. Yep. You're right. It was nothing but junk, you know.
You know, I really like at swap meets is there are some amazing artists, and what they can lay down on motorcycles is crazy.
Oh, there's the man right there. I still got to get Keith Sturgeon on this show, because he is fantastic. I mean, he's excellent, and he's been getting on more shows and different
he's a talented, you know, dude.
Motorcycle and hot rod podcasts and different shows along those lines. So yeah, I definitely want to get him on here. He's really building a reputation, and he's a good guy too.
Now is your motorcycle stock, or do you have some customizations?
Yeah,
on
no,
it?
No customization.
No customization. Okay.
No customization. Yeah, no, it's a 105th anniversary model. So okay. It's kind of custom, you know, right. The paint is special paint job for that model. Right. And it's got some special emblems and some special things on there. So I don't think you really want to mess with it.
No,
it's the way it should be. Right. Yeah. If it was something else. Yeah. You know, I've been thinking about putting some lights on it. That's one thing that I think I could use. Maybe a slightly different windshield. You know, there's a few things you always want to look at, but I
hear
pretty
that
much,
tattoos are the biggest blood drain.
You know what? No, you know what? It's anything. That's how hobbies are. Look at you.
I know.
Seriously. Right. Okay. Look at the high tech hobbies, you know, the helicopters, the drones, the laser printers, you start getting into all that stuff.
It's true.
I mean, it just goes, you know, look at some people that are addicted to gadgets and you're probably like this, that, you know, the one guy I used to work with, Nard, he would always have whatever the latest phone was, computer was. I mean,
no matter if he needed it,
I mean, he had an Apple wallet and Apple Cash and stuff like that before anybody even knew what it was, you know?
Right.
And no matter what would come out, he would always be, you know, on to that next thing.
Sounds like my kind of guy. Why hasn't he been on the show?
Really?
I want to talk to him.
I think he works at Apple tech support now.
Does he really?
I think so.
Me?
Yeah.
Wow. That's cool.
I think that's the last I heard. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's where he's at right now. And I mean, you know, so you like that. I mean, I look at my son with his fishing, or any of these guys that are into fishing. You know, I mean, once you get a boat, then you got that trolling motor. Then you got this kind of fish finder and that kind of fish finder, but you need this one. So now with the one that you started out with was a $500 unit. Now that you're really serious, you need the $3,000 unit. Yeah, the trolling motor that came with the boat was fine, but this one has the spot log GPS that puts you right on the spot. Yes. So you don't move. So now you need that. And now, you know what? Yeah, this I like that, you know, 150 motor, but you know what? I really need a 250. And so then you crank that up. And then the next thing, you know, same with, you know, cars. People are into cars. I think that's why they invented hobbies, to get money out of you. Even if you're just regular boater, you know, you're always just pouring money into a dock fees and things that break, and you know, you're getting the seats redone and you want this a little different. Yeah. You know what? I'm going to put a new stereo in there. Or, you know, I don't know if people put stereos in it. Yeah, they still do. They, you know, the amps, but now it's like run through a Bluetooth or whatever. It's not necessarily, you know, like you got a tuner or whatever. And, or whatever, cars, man, look at these hot rod car people and classic car people. And although the car people, I don't see them like the way they used to. I think that's kind of fading out. You know, I mean, I remember back when I was in high school, building cars to a lot of people was everything.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Muscle cars and Mopars and Chevelles and Barracudas and Roadrunners and GTOs and all that kind of stuff. That was big stuff. Everybody was into that big time, going down to Poland Avenue and drag race by the steel mills. And it's just everything. It's just, you know, and, but you don't see people like building cars anymore and stuff. I think of all these guys too, that were like, you know, motorheads in school. Oh, hey, he's a motorhead. That's been all their time in shop class or in their wrenching and stuff. You know, and then all of a sudden these guys go on to be mechanics and they're building cars. And I know one guy that from high school, you know, built his 57 Chevy in high school and still has it to this day, you know. Wow. Things like that. And I don't see kids out there doing that like they used to. Nobody gets under the hood and starts wrenching and stuff like they used to. I think it's a lost art, and I think it's fading. Yeah. Jay Bird said, don't forget the bike people. That's actually what got us started on this, Jay. Yeah. We're just as bad as everybody else, you know.
Yeah.
Just, that's one thing. When your bike breaks down and you got to get it fixed, you usually, I mean, you bitch a little bit, but you write that off as an immediate expense. It's like, well,
got to get new fenders.
Yeah, I got to get some. Oh, I got to do that, and they want that. Well,
it's in there.
You know, I'm gonna try to do it myself. But if you get some of these problems that you can't fix yourself, and see, that's the thing about me. I'm a terrible mechanic, and I'm a terrible fix it guy, terrible handyman. You know, it's easier for me,
right?
It's easier for me to go out and do a gig and get paid and pay somebody else to do what they do.
Right.
You know?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. We'll just do an even exchange,
yep.
You know, and sometimes that's how I like to work it, because, you know, if you don't do it a lot, although I'll tell you, YouTube has helped a lot. But even on those YouTube videos, it sometimes makes it look a lot easier because the guy knows exactly what you're doing.
Yes. You know? And I think cars were so much simpler back then to even work on them, you know?
Yeah.
The last car that I worked on, I had an 81 Cutlass, and I think I built just about every or rebuilt just about every freaking component on there. And I had every bit of 10 grand into that car. When I went to sell it, I sold it for like 2 grand. I was like, what? That's the tires that I just put on.
You know, see, that's the thing about some of this customization too, is that, you know, you might put a lot of money into a car. And I see this on all these car shows the time, you know, and even with bikes and stuff, you might customize that car to look a certain way. And if somebody doesn't like it, they're looking at that car like, I got to redo this whole thing.
Right.
And I see that on Counting Cars and a lot of these different shows where the guy will say, yeah, but I got this paint job and I got so much in that exhaust. And but then you look at it and say, yeah, but that's your taste.
Right.
The next guy that Kelly looks Blue at this Book car. Yeah. The next guy that looks at that car says, man, the first thing that got to go is that exhaust. I hate those tires. Oh, those wheels look like shit on that thing. And that paint job is god awful. This thing should be flat black or whatever, you know? And so these people, they spent all this time and all this money to make that car look the way they wanted it to.
Right.
But when you go to resell it, it might not be worth that much. And I've seen that on, you know, many years ago when the Hot Rod Supernats was really big. And Worldwide Auto Parts was the sponsor. And we gave away a lot of trucks back then. And they would do, that's back when everybody was doing the custom S10s and lowering them doing all kinds of stuff to them. But then somebody would win that and they might not actually like it. Or they're thinking, well, I'm going to sell it. And then they go to try to sell it because, well, I don't need a truck or, you know, that's really not my style or I'd like something. I'm thinking about getting a bike. So maybe I'll, and some people would look at that, and, you know, look at the paint job and stuff and go, you know, you would have been better off. That thing was just straight black
right.
and didn't have anything to it,
yep.
You know, and that's how a lot of that works too. You know, you could, Jaber saying, now I sound like a Harley dealership. Hey, that's how they do it. Maybe I'm going to start moonlighting there. How much you want to give me in his bike in trade? Yeah. I just gave you the whole story there. Then you would knock off another 2 grand over what I said there, Joe.
But, yeah, no knock on those industries, but yeah, the guy that's taking your trade is a different guy than is selling you the car, right?
He's
like, oh, there's a ding, there's 10,000 off.
Oh, nobody wants that kind of thing. But then again, there might be some guy out there that's sitting there saying, man, that is badass. That's exactly what I was thinking about.
Yep,
that's exactly what I want right there. Oh, that I love them flames on there.
Yeah,
you know. The green bike with the pink flames. That is so awesome.
Fire out of the tailpipe. I was dreaming about that.
Yeah. So, but that's the whole thing about any hobby is designed to get money off of you. That's why they invented them. That's musicians. It. There's another one. Look at all these guitar players we get in here and how sick they are with guitars. There's another one. These guys, you know.
They're not buying Walmart guitars. These are high dollars.
Oh, yeah. Thousands of dollars for guitars. Right. And then they get into them these like amps shoes. And everything. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, so you get into something. And if you're really serious about it, once they got their hooks in you, they know they got you, you know. They know they got you. And some people are like that. You know, women are like that with like clothes or, you know, fixing up the house. How many women are into that? That's their hobby. Their hobby is they want a nice grill on the patio or they want nice patio furniture. Oh, we got to get a wicker thing. We're going to get a table with an umbrella and we'll get one of them heaters and put it out there. And then we can build a fire pit, you know, and you know, so whatever it is,
that's
out there.
That all of us have that money suck. It really,
you know,
like carpenters, you know, with woodworking and fishermen and hunters are off the charts.
Yeah, there you go. What's up, Dave Price? How are you, man? Good to hear from you. Dave checking in here, our expert on Idora Park.
He's a good dude. Dave's a really good dude.
He is, you know, but, it's, you know, yeah, everybody's got a money drain. Unless everyone. You just want to
like
sit
uniformly,
at home.
No matter who you are.
If you just want to sit at home and do nothing, then, you know, maybe that's why people do that. Maybe they just say, I don't want to spend my money.
Yeah, pretend like they have it through YouTube videos like you started out.
Right,
with,
and then you, there's another thing. Then you go, okay, or traveling. People, you like to travel. I like to travel. Yeah. Once you start traveling, you don't mind throwing out money. Right. You know what? If it means going on that vacation to you, it makes sense.
That's right.
And you like it, and so you'll throw money out, and, you know. Although travel, you can cut corners. Harry George checking in. What's up, Georgie? How you doing, man? George has been a little under the weather, and it's good to see him up and about. And, boy, we've had some crazy times, me and that son of a bitch, boy. Whew.
You bring him up a lot on this.
He gets mentioned quite often. And we go way back, you know. He's actually the guy that really got me into motorcycling to where I am now. Harry George.
Mm-hmm. Your dealer. You got the first hit.
So now you know who to blame. Dave Price says he's overworked. I can't believe that, you know. Well, at least you're not underpaid, right, Dave? Yeah. You might be overworked, but at least you're not underpaid. That's the good
or
thing.
Or underappreciated.
About that. Yeah, or underappreciated. That's the good thing, man. You might be overworked, but you're not underappreciated and you're not underpaid. So, you know, 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Right.
You know what Meatloaf said? 2 out of 3 ain't bad. But I got a story here that was in the news today. And this is a great one. This happened in Warren. Okay. A man was robbed of $100 by drug dealers on bicycles in Warren.
Okay.
So, you know, I wonder what the pimps, if the drug dealers are riding bikes in Warren, what are the pimps doing? When the pimp is hitchhiking with a woman, you know, times are tough.
Yes.
So the drug dealers in Warren are riding bikes. So anyways, he said he was trying to buy some weed off of a couple who rode up to the Sunoco gas station on Todd Avenue on their Huffies. Here they come. They're pedaling up. And so he goes, those two look like they're probably selling some weed. Now, first of all, if you've ever known the reputation of the Sunoco station on Todd Avenue in Warren, the last thing I would want is to anybody there to know that I had $100 in cash in my pocket, first of all. That would be the last thing. Did you ever, to give you an idea of the neighborhood, okay, the hot dog shop is the only saving grace down there.
Yes.
You got the hot dog shop on one corner, and you got the Mission, okay?
Right.
And then you got the gas station, the notorious Sunoco, and then you got the Warren Dunkin' Donuts. Have you ever seen this building?
No.
You look at the Warren Dunkin' Donuts, and it's like a... it's a cement block building. There's no windows in it. There's one big, heavy security door, and it just has a drive-through window. It's just a cement block building. No, they don't even have a picture of it on there. It's just a brick block building. There's no front door. There's no back door. There's no windows. There's just some small glass block windows along the top, and that is it. And a speaker and a little drive-through window.
Wow.
Okay, so that gives you an idea of what we're talking about.
Not a great neighborhood.
Okay, so you come up from Newton Falls. You got $100 in your pocket. You go straight to the Sunoco, and you see these two people on the bikes, Bonnie and Clyde.
Right.
So, you know, so next thing you know, Lance Armstrong tells the sucker that, my girlfriend's in the store and she has the weed in her backpack. So give me $100 and I'll meet you behind the gas station.
Right.
So what he fails to say is that his girlfriend is in the gas station shoplifting and filling the backpack full of stolen shit.
Okay.
So now our boy goes around back waiting for the big score. The big payoff. You're not going to believe what happens next. They hop on their bicycles and take off in another direction.
Ah, oh, there's no honor among thieves, my friend.
So now keep in mind now, this guy's on a, they're on bicycles. This guy's in a car. So he goes chasing after him. So next thing you know, Bonnie and Clyde pull out a gun and said, "Hey, sucker, back off." So he backs off, but he calls the cops who caught up with them because they're on bicycles and you really can't escape from a scene of a crime on a bicycle that fast.
Right.
And you're probably pretty obvious in the middle of November.
Right. You know?
So anyways, they get busted and in the backpack, they found weed, a stolen pickle, some bologna, and a pack of cheese.
They're just freaking hungry, man. Why's a man got to keep them down?
You know? And so that was the big story of the big heist in Warren.
So did the guy get his weed or did he?
Yeah. Hey, officer, since you got that bag of weed there,
you know,
I really think that belongs to me. Do you think you can hand that over here? And can I have the bologna and the pickle too?
You're right.
Because that doesn't look like $100 bag to me.
No, they would have totally ripped me off.
So
like this was your stupid criminal. This was disqualified.
Yeah, you know, well, who's the stupid person in this one though?
Both. They're all dumb.
You know. I need some weed. Where can I go? Where can I go?
Sunoco.
Oh,
and
the
Warren.
Sunoco on Todd Avenue.
I can't believe it. I mean, it doesn't surprise me, but
yeah,
it's
yeah,
still fun to
yeah,
listen.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, there's one there. Let's see here. Yeah, Fort Duncan. Harry George called it right. It's Fort Duncan. Jaybird says electric scooter pimping is an old job. Well, you know what, though? See, sometimes, you know, if the pimp's been shot a time or two, maybe he needs an electric scooter.
Yes,
that's the one you don't want to mess with because he's been around, man.
Yeah, and he's got scratch for an electric scooter.
He's been shot a few times.
Old school cane, new school electric Segway.
Oh, yeah. Chris Rattini, what's up, man? He should have known if they were on bicycles on Todd Avenue, they had a gun. Yeah, you think?
See, if I had a gun, I'd jack a car at least. Why are you riding around on bicycles?
Well, it's easier. You know, no license plate numbers. And you probably jump off the bike and run away and just leave it there. And that sort of thing. Yeah, I'll tell you, George come up with the line of the night, man. Okay, and George has it figured out too. When you got that Jones, brother, you got that Jones. I need a joint pretty bad. There's got to be some weed at the Sunoco. But you know what? There's a good chance, though, that you know, obviously you probably got it there before.
Yeah. Right.
You know,
you get lucky and there's somebody in,
yeah,
they got weed in their pocket.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. On a bicycle. Maybe that's who, you know, easy to, you know, you could jump on that bicycle and head down some back road or through the woods or something. Maybe you got a little path or a trail and jump off and, you know, faster than
have you ever seen the dark web, by the way?
No.
Any exposure to it?
No.
All right. So it'll be at a certain point that you could just buy your stuff online because they've got it pretty perfected that you could buy that stuff.
Yeah.
So what it is it's sort of like an anonymous version of the internet where you just make these purchases and they use the postal service to just send you contraband. They have a perfect way of wrapping it and taking Bitcoin as payment. You buy anything.
Really?
Anything.
So how's this thing work?
So it takes a special, like, you know how you use Internet Explorer or Chrome?
Yeah.
It takes a special browser that it doesn't know how to get to the regular internet. It only knows how to get to the dark web internet. And so these sites come online for a day. You find them. And then after the day, they disappear. And then another one replaces it. So it's not like they can even track them or whatever. So.
And who's running this stuff? Is this foreign, just American, or a little bit of everything?
Anonymous.
Anybody?
You have no idea where it's coming from. And they have mules that move the stuff around where they'll find some desperate heart in Virginia or whatever and have her ship all the stuff out so they don't get caught. It's really well done.
No kidding.
Yeah.
That's some wild stuff going on out there.
Yeah. And you'd be surprised at this stuff. Like you can buy like phones that are not registered to anybody. You can buy chemicals that make for bombs and stuff like that.
Really?
It's pretty dangerous, you know, wild west kind of thing. Yeah.
And they'll send it to your house and package it in certain ways.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, so they probably don't even have to go through ports or different things. Yep. And they probably got this all, you know, this is like a movie kind of stuff, it is, you know,
dude. We'll have to give you a demonstration. We'll do one here and we'll show everybody. I'm not going to teach people how to do this.
Yeah.
Stuff, but at least shut it off a little bit.
Yeah. 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 Uh-oh. George got a dark web hookup. I should have known. He's probably one of the guys on
he's
here.
He's the dealer.
Yeah, I'm sure you do, Georgie. I'm sure you do. Oh, man. But that's what's happening in Warren. They put out a list here of what team the bookies think that OBJ is going to end up on.
Oh, who needs him?
Yeah, you know.
Anybody shit running too well, we want to blow it up. That's bring him in.
New Orleans Saints 3-1. Okay. Baltimore Ravens 7-2. Raiders 4-1. Bills 5-1. Patriots 5-1. Colts 8-1. Titans 8-1. Rams 10-1. San Francisco.
Yeah, I don't know. Belichick takes in some weird ones.
Yeah, he does. You know, I mean, he took in Josh Gordon, you know, he took in Randy Moss when he was kind of bad. Yep. And there was a few other ones that he tries to take him in, but they don't last too long. Though. No. He does, you know,
it's a value proposition. You get him for nothing. If you're able to bring him in, you get something out of it.
Yeah. And you know what? If he scores a touchdown in that one game to look good. Yeah. And then if he screws up the next game, you know, because some of these people are just habitual like that.
Right.
Antonio Brown and people like that. Some of these people are just habitual, and it goes back. Andre Rison. I mean, you could probably go through a list of especially wide receiver divas,
right?
You know, and you know, you could probably put together a whole thing there. Well, I think we'll do one more and wrap it up.
Okay, what do you think? Sounds good.
You think you had a bad day today? I got two. I got two. You think you had a bad day today? A guy in Brazil jumped into a lake to escape a swarm of bees. But tragically, he was drowned while being eaten by piranhas.
Oh, man. What a bad luck.
That is my luck right there. That is my luck right there. And then I don't even know why they printed this, but this was one of these things that was floating around today. An anonymous woman went on Twitter with a confession. Her husband keeps getting promoted at work because she's sleeping with her boss. And I said, man, where do you find a good wife like that that's willing to take one for the team? I mean, that woman's a keeper.
Heck yeah.
I mean, they're hard to find like that. You know, hey, I didn't have to pay for a set of tires down at the garage. The plumber come and fix my drain for free. The furnace guy was there. I never got a bill. I want to introduce her to the guy down at the Harley shop next.
There you go. Yeah, 2 o'clock in the morning, they're checking in, see how they're going.
How's that deal coming along? How's that 2021 looking? Hey, how's that 2022?
Look at the calendar now.
Yeah, they're looking at that like that's a bad thing.
Heck yeah.
You know, sleazy, cheating, floozy, or good wife, trophy wife of the year. That's man. Right. It all depends on how you look at it.
That's it.
All right, you ready to wrap things up?
I am.
All right, man. Good show here this afternoon or this evening or whenever time you're watching. Hey, good to check in with everybody. Good to hear from everybody. And I'll catch you tomorrow afternoon at 3 on Y103. Hopefully, I'm getting better. Hopefully, I got the right drugs. If not, I'm sure Harry George will hook me up on the dark web. Dark web. I'm sure they got some good cold medicine on there. Because where else are you going to buy your supplies to make meth if that's you're not right. On the dark web, right?
Acetaminophen or whatever that is.
Yeah, yeah. Sudafed.
That's it.
Sudafed, where you can't buy 15 boxes at a time anymore at Walgreens.
That's it.
Yeah, thanks, meth heads. We appreciate you. That's what I'm waiting for, recreational meth. Can you imagine what the recreational meth dispensary would look like?
Oh, man.
We'll put it right next to Fort Duncan in downtown Warren.
Right in there.
Right behind the Sunoco.
Do it legit.
Driving distance from Leavittsburg and Bristolville. Peace out, everybody. Thanks, Joe. Good time.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.